Lead gen and creating new markets is a lot like going to the slot machine. You have to be willing to dump the money in and hope you win. And you won't hit every single time.
It will be a slot machine if you don't have the metrics in place. If you don't have the process in place to be able to measure the outcome, then you're screwed.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. This is Brian Kaskavalsian. And with me today is Vince Nardo from California, Reborn Cabinets. That was the original name of the company, right?
Yeah, we've kind of adopted it. Now it's going into Reborn Home Solutions, but still Reborn Cabinets is the original brand.
I've known Vince and his brother, Anthony, for years and years and years. This is going to be the first like in-depth conversation you and I have had. We've had, you know, passing but we've never really had an in-depth conversation. But you guys built a hell of a business. So why don't we start with giving everybody like, give them the quick like 2 minute backstory.
Brian, I got to tell you, I'm very, very honored to be here and be on your channel. And you have a lot of dedicated listeners. So really, I feel this is an honor and a privilege. But to kind of go back, so the company was originally founded in 1983 by our dad, Vinny. And, you know, just like a lot of people that get in this business, it was never supposed to be this big thing, right? It was really, we had left New York in the 70s, just me and my brother, my mom and my dad. They wanted to move out of the East Coast, move somewhere. And we lived in a trailer. And they drove back and forth across the country, you know, trying to figure out where they wanted to end up. And we ended up in California. Well, back in those times in the 70s, this thing, cabinet refacing, wasn't a thing, right? It was on, at least on the West Coast, but it was a thing on the East Coast. So he was a carpenter. He worked for some companies. And just like a lot of probably like your listeners, he sat there and said, hey, you know what? I can do this better than my boss, right? I'm tired of working for the man and I want to be the man. So he started this little tiny cabinet company, you know, a table saw, a guy, and they built cabinets. And so that existed for quite a few years. And then when I got out of high school, which was about 4 or 5 years later, and did a little stint in college, the business started to grow. And I looked at the business and what was going on, and I realized my dad needed to bring in people he could trust, right? He was having to hire people. They were leaving. And again, just like a lot of small businesses, you know, he would hire for what he would, for the talent he wanted, rather than have the system and the business processes to take anybody. And so when someone would leave, it would be like, oh my gosh, the business is going to fall apart. My top sales guy left. My CFO left, right? And it was like, oh my gosh, the business is going to fall apart. So I joined, I dropped out of college and joined in the late 80s and just started working in the business. And we kind of looked at it at that point as, you know, it was just this way to really provide a lifestyle for the family. It was a lifestyle business. That's what it was. So through the next several years, the business started to grow. We went through some great times. We know we've added multiple products, which we can talk about. But fast forward like 20 years later, the business had grown a lot. My brother had come in at that point. I have four kids. My brother has four kids. It started growing and growing and growing. And we started expanding. And what really was the basis of all that was my mom's is a real estate broker. And if anybody knows anything about the real estate business, it's a sales and marketing engine, right? It's generate your own leads, knock on doors, get listings, sell deals. And my mom's family's all in real estate. So she kind of brought that marketing angle to the business. So if I look back and say, you know, what was the key critical couple things in the early days? It was really starting the business as a sales and marketing business, right? Not as a product service business, and focusing everything we did around sales and marketing and metrics. I mean, I'll date myself, and I am old, but you know, I helped my dad build, because in those days you had no CRMs. We built our first CRM on our Apple II Plus, right? I mean, that was our CRM. It was built in basic, but just making sure that from the early days, we focused on those key things. And, you know, my mom and dad are still alive today and we've grown quite a bit and we can kind of talk more on that. But, you know, we ended up growing to in excess of 700 team members, multiple states, and the business evolved from just cabinetry facing to adding new products and services. And kind of what we looked at it again, this was all from a marketing angle. What was like, hey, we've bought a lead. What else can we sell them? Right? Because in this game, the hardest part, it's not the product or the service. Everybody does that well.
Yeah.
It's generating a lead and maximizing your investment on your marketing dollars. So we added bath, you know, we added one day bath, we added windows. And we just kept broadening out the service so that we could service more and more of the customer's house.
So let's go back. Let's talk a little bit about sales and marketing, because to me, you know, in my book, in the Seven Secrets book, I talk about understanding the real business that we're in. And the real business that we're in, we're in sales marketing. It doesn't, you know, to fill in the blank, we're a sales and marketing company that happens to sell, you know. And a lot of people don't really understand, I think, what that really means. And so, but you got it kind of early on. What did it kind of mean for you back then?
If I think about it, for me, it was understanding looking at the lead generation, the conversion cycle and everything, just like we would look at a project, right? I would have a project, I'd plan a project, I'd look for milestones in the project, I'd install the project and look for a successful outcome. And I'd measure my business against all those different performance, and I get a good review or a positive or a bad review. And we kind of took the marketing channel and built that same thing, right? So how many leads did I need to get? How did I need to convert? How much were they going to cost me? What was going to my return on them? And we focused everything around that type of metric. And I think that's an area where a trap of lack of knowledge that a lot of entrepreneurs in this space specifically get trapped in, because most people come to this business with a technical aptitude of the service part of the business and not a technical aptitude of the metrics and the performance and the analysis that is required to keep it running. And I think that's just where we got it different and we got it right from the beginning.
So when you say that, And you're right. I don't disagree with anything you said. But some people listen to that and say, God, that sounds complicated. It sounds complex. It sounds hard to do. How do you start that? How does somebody that may or may not be doing it as well as they should, especially today, which I want to ask you a little bit about what's happening today, but how do you help somebody kind of start doing that the right way?
So the very first thing is check your ego at the door, right? You have to be a student of success. And I've kind of looked at it and said, I never want to be the smartest guy in the room. And I'm always a learning book. And even to today, I'm learning, right? Everything's a learning experience. I don't know everything there is to know about this business. I've learned a lot. And so what we did was we started to surround ourselves with people that were smarter than ourselves, and they weren't in our business. And what I mean by that, it is using consultants, going to people that knew more, learning from the top, right? We always envied. I mean, I remember it's funny stories. It's like looking at the top 500 and looking at back in the day, you know, it was like, wow, if you could reach $25 million in revenue, you had made it. That was like the top of the top 500,
right? That was it. And by the way, it wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago, right? Yeah. Now it's 5 times, 10 times that, 100 times that. So I looked at those and I said, you know what? I want to be like that. So I would put myself in situations where I could bump up against those guys, ask those guys. You know, let me give you an example. So in the cabinetry facing business, which for the most part, up until probably the last 5 years, was very much fragmented, smaller. It was never really a thing, right? As far as we're concerned. Matter of fact, the only guy that ever really made it a thing was Murray Gross with US Remodelers and selling it to Home Depot way back when, right? That kind of set the bar. But take Murray Gross, for example. I would put myself in situations to talk to Murray, right? Introduce myself, ask questions, and gather knowledge, because the one thing that I've loved about this business is everybody shares. You know, it's not like this industry where everybody's close knit and I can't talk to you, look at you, or have dinner with you. It's like, sure, you know, want to know? So I would go to events, I would hire consultants, and the main big turning point for our business was actually the recession that we had in the 2000s. That really was the main point, because we knew at that point, and we had gone through recessions prior in the 90s and all that other stuff that had happened in the 80s, but that one really said, hey, if you don't change your business, you're not going to be in business.
Yeah.
And so we went through a whole reorg of the business at that point, or from how we were generating leads to call centers and hired consultants and brought those folks in to guide us through what we needed to do to be successful.
You know, it is interesting that the answers are out there. I mean, part of the reason why this podcast exists is to get that knowledge and to share that knowledge with other people, because the answers to all the questions are out there.
Yes.
There isn't really anything new. And so going to people like you, or like in your case, going to Murray Gross, let me go to the top and ask him questions and learn and be open. The key piece to that is you actually went home and implemented what you learned.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other component of this is business discipline. You know, we all go to these events, and I used to hate the events because I'd come home with a laundry list of to-dos, right? And I'd be like, crap, now what do I do? Because the minute I would step in my office in meeting hell, and I'm dealing with the daily grind of the business, and I can't work on it. And, you know, I actually took a page from Gerber's E-Myth book and just kind of said, you know, we need to be working on it, not in it.
Yeah.
And so through discipline, it was hard. It was super hard. I mean, I remember having meetings with my leadership team and going, we need to work on the business. We're like, when? Right? When? There's customers complaining. We got to deal with this. But we had to consciously be disciplined to spend the time working on the business. And if I could go back, and this is kind of what I've told others in this space that are smaller, is do it from day one. You don't need to be at a certain level or certain size or have a certain amount of volume. I mean, you can be one guy. But document, plan, and strategize on a regular basis. So my brother and I set out, and this was probably in the late 90s, early 2000s, 25 years ago. We set out and we planned an exit strategy. And we said, where do we want to take this business? So we designed everything around the end in mind. Now we've diverted that and extended out. The recession kicked it down. You know, COVID might have sped it up, whatever, but it all got changed. But we still had that basic book of what we wanted to do. And so we just made a conscious effort to document. I mean, back in the early days before, you know, having all these online things, I mean, I can remember we had like 300 SOPs that we had written, right? How to do this, how to do that. And I, you know, recently I met with a friend of mine who has a small roofing company, and they were in the same trap. They're like, he's the owner. He's got to do everything, right? He can't hire it. And I was like, you can't hire what you need. You need to have the systems to put anybody that has the talent into them.
Yeah.
And they have to perform the business your way, not their way. Because the only way you're going to grow is you're going to have to be 100% consistent in every single thing you do. It's got to be a machine, right? I mean, like E-Myth talks about McDonald's. It's got to be a machine. And so I think that's the discipline that we caught on to early that is the trap that a lot of young entrepreneurs in this business fall in today.
Yeah. Well, and also going back to the book, the book came from talking with guys like you for years and years and years and my own personal experiences. These are the things that make people successful in this or any business. And the number one thing to me is defining what it is that you want. So you and your brother 25 years ago sat down and said, okay, this is where we want to get to. This is what that looks like. And then I'm going to assume that you then just reverse engineered everything to say, which is the number one secret in my book, is understand what you want and then figure out what the business needs to look like in terms of leads, sales, conversions, average ticket, blah, 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 you know, all the numbers, and then work to that. And so that's what you guys did.
That's exactly what we did. And then as we grew and we entered into areas where we didn't know, we brought in the knowledge, you know, and again, not knowledge we hired, but knowledge we consulted with.
Yeah.
You know, putting together advisory boards and learning, because like we said earlier, I mean, the help is out there, but you've got to know. And it amazes me, and I'm sure it amazes you, when you go into some of these businesses, younger businesses, and you ask the most basic questions, like, what's your marketing budget, right? Or, you know, what's your gross margin? Or, you know, what's your conversion rate on leads? And, you know, what's your average ticket? And what a lot of people also try to do is overcomplicate this business. This business is not complicated. You know, yes, there's, you know, jobs that are super big and jobs that are super small, but at the end of the day, there's an average. Just use the average. So it's just simplifying the business down to the most basic building block fundamentals that yield to the result you want. And then monitoring them. That was the other thing. You know, it was making sure that we were regularly keeping our finger on the pulse of the business. You know, where were we at on a daily basis? And when we were smaller, it was easier because I could do the numbers myself. As you grow, it gets more complicated. You have to bring in teams and you have to have systems and you have to have reporting structure. But that's the other thing is everybody, you know, a lot of businesses create these great dreams and they come up with these plans and they put them in a book. And then they come back a year later and open the book and go, what happened? You know, we wanted to be over there. We wanted, you know, it's like my parents driving from New York to California. We wanted to be in California. We ended up in Canada. What the hell happened?
This episode is brought to you by 1nFund. At 1nFund, they know the frustration of trying to close a sale only to face a financing decline. The traditional financing process is cumbersome and often leaves customers overwhelmed. 1nFund is not a lender or a financing company. It's a sales enablement tool and a critical part of your tech stack to maximize profitability. Founded by home improvement experts, 1nFund simplifies and accelerates home improvement financing. The revolutionary one-look, multi-lender finance platform acts as your finance manager in a box. Statistics show that 58% of salespeople don't run second look in the home. One look does the work so your reps don't have to. And with a single application, 100% of One Look apps get a first through third look. It also delivers a 10% increase on project acceptance. One Look benefits your customers, sales reps, business, and the lenders, providing stronger approvals. Visit oneandfund.com. That's the number one and fund. .com today to start delivering an exceptional experience for all.
I was going to move from back then to today because the thing that we're seeing now, you know, I just recently did a podcast episode that for all intents and purposes is called The COVID Boom is Over, but I didn't call it that because I thought that was a little bit too rushed. But the first thing I say in it is, okay, I hate to say it, but somebody has to, the COVID boom's over. And what we're seeing is companies like yours that really had a diverse marketing mix. I would imagine that you guys have dozens of sources of leads that are coming in every single day.
Hundreds, yeah.
What a lot of people, you know, you saw this is a lot of people the last, you know, between summer of 2020 and say the end of 2023 or summer of 20, that 3-year period, really were able to ride the wave and for really all intents and purposes, outsource their marketing to aggregators and to internet marketing companies. And what's happening now is like, oh shit, we got to go back and we got to figure out how are we going to make leads today because we can't rely on them. And so how do you, What's your advice to people that are kind of caught in that trap of, well, I've been using aggregators, I've been using them, and I'm not that good at marketing. How do they even like get started figuring out how to make a lead in this business? Because like you said earlier, the toughest part of this business is not the service. That's the easiest part. The hardest part is lead generation. And the core is a sales system that, like you were saying before, consistent. So if I know that my average ticket is, say, $12,000. Well, okay, I know now that every lead I generate is going to produce X amount of NSLI. And based on that NSLI, I can run that against my marketing costs to see if I'm making any money or not.
What's the deal of business in the end?
Yeah. But how do you get away from the reliance on others to provide leads to now you becoming the marketer?
Yeah. So I look at it as BCAC, before COVID and after COVID, right? And I think the answer is different depending on your listener, because what COVID did is also create a lot of entrepreneurs into the business during COVID, which is the worst. They're in the worst position.
They are.
Those that were a live AC, BC, if you BC. Will, before COVID. Yep. You know, COVID made us weak. It really did. Part of it we were forced into because we could no longer do face-to-face marketing. So we were all looking to fill that face-to-face marketing void with something new. And COVID really put aggregators on steroids.
Yeah.
There were always a handful of aggregators in this business, the Queen Streets, the, Angie's, all these ones that existed forever. But during COVID, they just came out of the woodworks because lead gen was easy, right? And lead gen became cheap during COVID. And we all got weak. And we forgot the basic fundamentals of our business and tried to ride this wave. And that wave has crashed. It's completely crashed right now. And so for those that were around BC, it's getting back to basics. It's getting back to the fundamentals of your business, getting back to doing SEO, getting back to doing pay-per-click, getting back to doing face-to-face, and getting back to doing the things that you did before COVID, and forget and don't think you're going to be able to live on aggregators, because you are not. Now, this year, we have an extra challenge because it's an election year. TV and some of those other medias are becoming a little bit more difficult. So you've got basically a perfect storm right now. You've got aggregators going away, and you've got other channels that we use not performing as much as well as they did. So we've got to get really down and into the trenches and start looking at, where are those areas where, because customers are out there. Customers are out there. They're always out there. It's just finding them. So the businesses that, the listeners you have that were formed DC during COVID, they're going to have to look at bringing in the knowledge and the consultative knowledge of people that understand how to generate leads for this business. And they're going to need to get that help, because if they did not come into this space with any sort of marketing knowledge of how to generate leads, it is going to be difficult for them. But there's businesses out there, right? There's internet web marketing companies. There's companies that provide that consulting as a service that will help guide them through how they need to do it. They need to be receptive, and they need to realize they got to invest the money in that knowledge. That was the other thing, right? It was making the realization that we had to take a chunk of change and invest it to get the knowledge we needed to bring into the business.
And that's tough because, I think one of the things that's also happening right now is cash flow is a little bit of an issue because, there was so much cash moving through the industry and moving through businesses. Well, when that starts to slow down a little bit, now it gets harder. It's like, what do I do? Do I feed my family, or do I go invest in, like what you said, do I go invest and learn how to be a better business owner, whether that's through marketing, whether that's through sales, becoming better at sales, whether it means better profitability, like understanding how to make a profit in the business, how to run teams, EOS. I mean, there's so much out there. It's kind of overwhelming. I mean, were you guys ever in that situation where it was like, all right, well, we got to eat, but we also got to keep moving forward?
100%. I mean, I could tell you times growing up as a kid where, Christmas was a shirt from Kmart, right? And dinner, even in the early years of being married, I've been married for 35 years, it was, it was beans, right? But that's why the one thing we all have in ourselves that came into this business as an owner is we have an inherent sense of success and confidence. And an entrepreneurial person has to be willing to jump off the cliff that somebody else packed their chute, right? You have to be able to take that dive. If you're not willing to take that dive and jump into the unknown, this business is not for you. Running a company is not for you, and you most certainly aren't going to build a super successful business. You can have a good lifestyle business that provides good, you know, for your family, but you're not going to have a super large business. So I can say that that's probably what I brought to the business, even more than my family and my brother, was a willingness to press the envelope and see what would happen. I kind of look at lead gen. I've had this discussion a lot lately, but you know, lead gen and creating new markets is a lot like going to the slot machine. You have to be willing to dump the money in and hope you win, and you won't hit every single time.
Yeah.
But you have to be willing to do that, and you have to be willing to bankroll it for at least 60 to 90 days, right? You have to be able to do that. And it doesn't have to be a lot of money. You know, a lot of people think, well, I got to have, you know, millions of dollars to do this. No, you don't. You know, take $10,000. If you can find a channel that you're small enough, find $10,000, find $30,000 and start investing it. Make sure you have the metrics to monitor it and start to play.
It will be a slot machine if you don't have the metrics in place. If you don't have the process in place to be able to measure the outcome, mm-hmm. then you're screwed. Then it's Vegas and you're just putting money into a slot machine and there's no rhyme or reason to, you're going to lose at the end. You're going to lose. However, if you are playing that game and you are going to make an investment, you better be damn sure you could track every single lead that comes from this source, that source, every single phone call. How did it disposition? Where did it go? You know, one of the things I talked about in that podcast episode is today, you know, people, we got very sloppy with leads during COVID. I mean, when you got, and you and me, I mean, I haven't been in the business quite as long as you, but close. I had never seen anything like that.
No,
we had never had a time where there was so many. I mean, we had good times, like the mid-2000s were pretty good until it wasn't, we gave everything back that we made. But we had never seen anything like COVID. And so when you got all this coming in, we got sloppy and we got lazy.
We hired lazy. We trained lazy. I mean, we look back at our business and every throughout the whole conversion cycle of lead gen, we created weak people. You know, we hired people in the call center. We didn't train them because it was easy. They call, they want an appointment, you book it. You don't have to convert anybody. So everybody became weak. And we just kind of now, we just looked at the business post that and said, we got to get back to the basics. We just got to pull out all the stuff we have on our shelf, teach it, hold people accountable to it, and get back to what we were doing and how we knew how to be successful at it, which goes to why it's so important to make sure that everything in our business is documented. So even when we divert, we still have the fundamental business structure there that we can pull in and teach.
Yeah.
How important is right now for you guys lead efficiency?
Oh, 100%, because leads have gotten expensive.
Yeah.
Right? Cost of marketing has gone way up. I mean, look at sit in any single seminar or event, and everybody's going to talk about the cost of marketing is skyrocketed, right? So now we've got to be super on our game. We've got to be more into our KPIs than we ever have before. We have to be more responsive to our KPIs, turning off channels that aren't working, bringing in channels that are working faster than we ever before. We've got to fight for our conversion in the home, fight for our gross margin efficiency on our service side of our business.
Yeah.
Because the margins are being degraded if we're not careful.
Yeah, those were the big things that I talked about, is lead efficiency, making every sales opportunity, like put your best foot forward, deliver the best presentation you can possibly deliver, make sure your people are trained. I mean, you're role playing, you're doing all those things, you're getting rid of the weak people because, you know, you're spending a lot of money on that lead and you're giving it to a salesperson and the expectation is a certain close percentage. And if you're not hitting it,
just think of a simple math.
It's an opportunity.
Very few companies are putting anybody in the home for under $600 right now.
Yeah.
So if a sales rep runs two leads a day, 5 days a week, you've just given them $6,000. You just handed them, I mean, I'm just giving you, Brian, here's $6,000. I need to see a return next week.
Yeah.
I wouldn't give my financial advisor a dollar if he couldn't turn me a return. But yeah, we'll go in and out. There's businesses out here day in, day out that'll give $6,000 to a sales rep every single week over and over and over again and get nothing in return.
Yeah.
And they'll make all the excuses why it's okay. And then when you dive into those smaller businesses and you go, what's your selling process? What do you mean selling process? I give the lead to the guy who goes in the house and he does something. And you go, well, how do you even manage performance across your sales team if there's no consistency in what everybody's doing? You know, we kind of looked at it and it even goes, you know, one thing we didn't talk about, what's also important is the culture and rules you run your business by. You know, one of the things we also did back in the 2000s when we set this plan out to get to the end was developed a set of core values that was going to be the way we managed and ran the business. And one of those core values was systems and processes and making sure that, you know, everybody that came into the business understood that we were going to systematize it, we were going to be held accountable to it, and everybody was going to do it the same way. And so I think that's also important, is making sure that we look at our business and say, who are we and how are we going to do it? And is everybody we hire going to abide by that? You know, it's super important. So it's just, you know, the nice thing about this business is in the end, you can make a lot of money at this business. It's not complex as far as everybody, I mean, like 15 key metrics you got to watch in this space. So it's not complex. You have to have a strong stomach to wade through the highs and the lows. And you have to just always be one that's wanting to go out there and gather more knowledge into what you're doing.
One of the things that you did that was very smart, and it's actually something we're providing people with now at The Wealthy Contractor through our Success Society, is you had a mastermind group. I don't know if you guys called it a mastermind group, but you were with Larry Kloss, Brian Gottlieb,
BJ, Rusko,
yeah,
Linko, Rusko, all the big guys.
And it was funny because there was talk about you guys. What did everybody call you? The Big 12.
At first, we got the nickname the Dirty Dozen, but we ended up kind of making our own name the Big 12.
The Big 12. But how impactful and important was that for your overall success?
I mean, we're still on the daily text thread. None of us would have been, I mean, everybody ended up creating huge companies or selling their companies. None of us would have been where we are today without that group. 100% every single member would say that. And really, it was kind of unique when we did it. And it was because we had, you know, again, we go into all the events, you develop relationships, right? And we developed relationships with all these guys. And we were probably at the beginning all, you know, call it sub $20 million, small companies, right? And one of the things that we discovered was when we would go to these events, they were great, but we actually garnered more knowledge at the bar than we did in the seminars, just talking. And so we got together, and again, it goes to the business, right? Everybody's willing to help each other. We got together and we said, we need to really start leveraging each other's talents and each other's knowledge and pooling that together for the overall success of each of us. And you check your ego at the door, right? None of us came to that meeting with, oh, I do it better than you. Or, oh, you know, I'm going to jack my numbers so I look better than I am. Or whatever it was. It was an open book of sharing ideas and thoughts. And, you know, Gottlieb is in it, you know, and just sharing thoughts and learning from each other. And we developed a group that, I mean, I'll also tell you, I wouldn't have got through COVID without that group, you know. I mean, California was the first state to get officially shut down, right? I remember the day, it was a Thursday. And, you know, being able to pick up the phone and call Brian Gottlieb to talk me off the ledge.
Yeah.
Because that first day, it was like the whole business is done.
Yeah.
But that's what you develop in this business, is those relationships. And they're invaluable.
Mastermind groups are super powerful. If, you know, I'll do a shameless plug here, but, you know, we run four groups. Within our Success Society, we run four groups of 12, and I'm working on maybe forming a fifth group. but it's super powerful when you have a group of people that you share ideas off of. And it's, you know, Napoleon Hill talked about the Mastermind Alliance and Think and Grow Rich and how powerful it is to be in a group of people. And I've been in mastermind groups for years. And you're right. I mean, a lot of the time it's, okay, let's share best practices and let's help each other. But a lot of time too, it's, hey, I need to be talked off the ledge, you know, help me out here. You know, I've had many of those, you know, talk me off the ledge phone conversations. And it's great to have that. It's great to have that because as entrepreneurs, damn, we're lonely. I mean, you have your brother, you have your family involved. Are your kids involved in the business? I didn't realize you were married. You've been married for 35 years.
Yeah, three grandkids.
What? You have three grandkids? Aren't we the same age?
I'm 55.
I'm a year older than you, man. I am not ready to be a grandfather. My wife is talking puppies and grandkids. I'm like, are you out of your fucking? I'm not ready for that.
So yes. So my, I have four kids. My second oldest son is a general manager for one of the divisions at Reborn. My son-in-law works there. My nephew works there. Those are the only kids that are in the business right now. They've all come in and out, you know, and done a little stint, you know. And I think, and that actually brings up another point. Is the family business dynamic, right? That's a huge dynamic. And most family businesses don't last. We're 40-something years. You know, we went through an acquisition 2 years ago, but 40-something years in business. That's another thing is that a lot of your listeners will be husbands and wives,
yeah,
or brothers or dads and kids. Is you have to make sure that you're not a family business. And what I mean by that is you are a family with a business. You are not, your business doesn't define your family. And once you can make that distinct separation, you realize that what happens at work is not who we are. And you don't bring what happens at home to work. And I can honestly say, and if you ask any of our team members, you would never see my brother, my parents, myself yell and scream. We're not throwing shit down the hallways. You know, there was a respect that the business required. You know, I can be my brother's boss and we can talk it through and I can ultimately have the say and he understands that and it can accept that. Or vice versa, he was the CFO. He can have a direction that we need to go and I've got to accept that. But we had to make that distinction. Otherwise, we would be stuck personalizing every single thing.
Yeah. Great advice. Great, great advice. Let's say it again, not a family business, but have a business for the family.
We were a family with a business.
A family with a business. Yeah. Yeah.
I hate that term family business because it's so untrue.
Yeah.
So untrue.
Well, Vince, this has been great. I know you're a busy guy. You got a lot to do, but I appreciate you taking the time and sharing your story with us. It's a great story. I'd love to have you come back and
absolutely
we could talk more about more mechanics of the business. But I'd love the advice that you gave and appreciate it a lot. To everybody that's listening, I say this a lot, but this is another episode to go back and listen to again, just because he packed in so much into this that it would be good to go back and listen and kind of, you know, you'll pick up new things the second time you listen to it. So until next time, this is Brian Kaskavalsian, and this is the Wealthy Contractor Podcast.
Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.